And we go in, and the, we basically work with the church, with the parish priest, that we learn of places that we rebuild, houses that are broken down. We host, different, schools. I'm hoping to be a part of the medical missions, which will host nurse practitioners or physicians or nursing students or something like that to go down there, and we'll provide medical assistance. But we rebuild houses, we provide food, medication, and so I have tons of stories about you know the places that I've seen already.
And you say you've been to Mexico. Have you been to any other countries, or just Mexico a number of times, or how many of these have you done?
So Dominican Republic, well, back at the beginning, which will be part of my story, I did do a lot more. For about 10 years, I went to 1 to 2 mission, short-term mission trips every year, and for about 10 years until I was about 28. And then recently, it's only been the last 3 years that I joined the different medical missions that are out of Texas, and until I found Family Missions Company again.
Now, the average person listening right now who might be single, might be, you know, a mother of 3 children or, you know, older, can anybody participate in these if they're interested or intrigued, or is this for a particular professions, or who can be involved?
So I am single right now, and life just made it that way that I'm single with no kids. But Family Missions Company, their specialty, they're lay missionaries that are family oriented. So it's basically the Holy Family is the patron, you know, kind of like the guiding force in that. And so most of the people that are long-term missions have families in the mission field. So up to, like, you know, of course, a Catholic family, like 8 kids. So, you know, I'm going down there. I'm one of the only single people in this group, but they go ahead and take both single and families.
All right. Very good. Well, we'll provide perhaps a website or some information.
Absolutely.
Or maybe your own contact information if people are interested by the end of this interview. So now we've got that. Let's hear about your story and what led you up to this. I know you sent me a nice little one-page email with some information about your own story. Born in San Francisco, grew up in Texas. Your parents divorced. Your grandmother's had a great influence on you. Mm-hmm. Fill in some of the blanks. Tell us a little bit about your early life and some of the influences back then, and what your early life was like.
Absolutely. So my early life, you know, I grew up in San Antonio. So I moved from San Francisco. My parents came with me, but I'm just kidding. I was about 2.
Brought
him down to San Antonio. No, that's where most of my family was and grew up. So I grew up in San Antonio. And the reason, because you're referring to my bio that I have on the Family Missions website regarding, you know, I put on there about the divorce. The only reason why that would be pertinent in my group is because God has done so much healing along the years, allowing me not so much to deal with divorce because it didn't deal with me, but it was, but there was a lot of times that I felt alone. Like there was, you know, my mom was a single mom until I was about 15. Then I went to go live with my dad. We did see him like 1 month out of the year. And and there are some other top opportunities that we got to see our dads and our dad. And he was very involved in the sense that he called on the weekends. He came to in town and things like that. But for the most part, lived with a single mom and an older brother. And she was very busy. She was a modern day woman, and she was, you know, we had our turkey dinners out of the microwave. So we had a lot of things that were very modern. She worked and she went to school, and she came home late a lot of times. I woke up a lot of times where no one was there, and I walked to school. And those weren't the bad thing about it. I just remember being alone a lot, and I remember that I was sad a lot, and there wasn't, you know, so much in that other than it was a chronic thing where I grew up, and there was a need to get the attention of my mom, get the attention of my dad, get attention. Now my grandmothers were involved as much as they were able to, but they were very prayerful grandmothers, and so they had a huge influence. And I think grandparents alone are in a position to be very influential.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I put that down there, 'cause to give them credit. But as I grew, I carried with me to my adult life those things that were unresolved when I was younger. And the reason why that's even part of my story compared to saying that's in my history book and I don't necessarily need to go back and look at it was because of the profound healing that has happened as God has shown, came into my life and showed how sovereign he was. And so, as I come from my childhood with those emptiness of, you know, people pleasing already developed some coping skills that, you know, that I felt like that I wasn't good enough. I had ADD, which is, something that for me is a blessing and also a difficulty, where what that meant is that I felt like everywhere I went, I was in trouble. So I was the one that was kind of always talking. I was always into something. For me, it was, I didn't know what I was doing wrong, but every single, adult person in my life for a long period of time, it was like, they're like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. You know, like, so
you were hyperactive and,
I was curious. I was energetic and for me is like, I didn't know what I was doing wrong, but I feel like I interpreted, a lot of my surrounding stuff as like, I'm in trouble. I'm doing something wrong, even though I don't know why, you know? And so for me, that was important for me to unravel as I grow older.
Yeah. So where does Our Lady fall into this? It sounds like women were a big part of your life. Your grandmothers praying for you, your mom, who of course, you know, was busy and mm-hmm. trying to raise you and divorced, a single mom. And I know Our Lady plays a big part of your story. How does she enter into the picture?
So as far as still staying on my younger years, I remember there's some things that happened that just from being alone a lot, and there are some things that happened that I remember going on my knees and saying my first rosary by myself. Now, I went to Catholic school, and there are some a lot of influence as far as the rosary. My grandmother prayed the rosary all the time. So for me, there's some times that I go back as I healed that God reminded me that I said I was on my knees saying the rosary, the whole rosary by myself. For some reason, that was impressive when I was a kid. But I just remember how caring and how close I felt to Our Lady at that time. That you know, I was going through just that transition of growing up and growing pains. Everybody didn't like me. You know, my interpretation, mm-hmm. not that that was true.
But how was your, do you have friends? Were you, because everything you've said so far has mostly been about adults and your relationship with them and them thinking, you know, you're a bit of a pain and all that. But did you have peers? Did you have friends? And
So I had an older brother that was coping in his own way. And so I did. I had a few friends, but there's not a lot of times someone at home so that they could come over, or so I'd probably say I had friends at school, but I was a little bit odd. I was very energetic, and I remember, and I say odd only because, you know, this is how I interpreted whenever I watched, I can't believe I forgot the movie, but it was with Urban Cowboy. Okay, thank you.
Oh, okay.
John Travolta. Thank you. So here I am on the playground, as far as like that, I'm listening to my little cassette tape, and I'm in my mind at the bar, and I have my boots on now with my uniform and my thumbs and my thing, and I just sat there just listening to music. So I had a very interesting way of interpreting things, but I brought it into my life. So anyway, so I consider myself a little bit odd, but that was just how I see it now.
Yeah. You mentioned it, well, in the bio that I read, you had a spiritual awakening at 15. Mm. You get a degree in nursing. You're doing some of these short term missions. And then you mentioned that in your upper 20s, you entered into what you called a season of distraction, where there's a little bit of a regression, right? You seem to be going on the right path, and all of a sudden, something got in the way. Well, what was that? What happened then?
Right. So bringing it out of the childhood, and so because that's a long time ago, and then all of a sudden, I'm going into, my first moment of where I needed a change from where I was. And so I ended up moving with my dad. He already had a family, and I was around 15. So a lot of things happened at that time. So Our Lady, we had locutions over at St. John Newman in Lubbock, Texas at the time, where there was like 20,000 people that came. It was in the paper. And so I was part of that prayer team. And so immediately I got involved and had some spiritual experiences there as far as like in the prayer group. And so one of my experiences, I went down to Mexico, And so I was challenged like probably 2 weeks before going down of saying, you know, what does God want from you? And at the time I was still involved in my whole, you know, just growing up and you know, how am I dealing at school and whatever and in my new church. And so I went to Mexico kind of really asking with my whole heart, God, what do you want from me? Because it was a new question for me. I didn't, you know, it kind of blew my mind that I could even ask God for that. So I went down there and as I was walking around the Zocalo or the square around there, and I remember I had kids all over me because at the time I was, you know, big enough to be kind of like the jungle gym. And so I had kids hanging off of me and I was the one that they wasn't able to say, you know, relax. And so anyway, so I was in a very playful mode and it was one of the first times that I got a voice in my heart that said to be a missionary physician. And so what it did for me was that I understood to a certain level that I had a purpose. And so I shared it with my youth director at the time. I talked to some of the people. We prayed about it. Had a lot of people confirm that someone received their calling. So for me, I took that for what it was, and I was able to go from there. And I was in art at the time, but I ended up saying, okay, I'm going to go to pre-med. So that was going to be my focus. And you know, difficult to still focus and all that stuff. Hadn't really kind of understood as far as why I'm so scattered. I pursued nursing, because I wanted to get married. I was engaged at the time. And so I kind of thrived in that, finally got through. But in the middle of it, so this is from 15 to 28, I was already going back to, the mission field every single year. So that's when I was doing the short-term missions. And I joined nursing school like my mid-20s. So for me, you know, the difference between a coincidence or a potential movement of God is the difference of it changes your life. So coincidences, you know, could happen, but if it changes your life, then you can consider that as a miracle and from God. So for me, it was a gift of faith at that time that this is going to be my path. So as I go into my 20s, I finished nursing school before I finished nursing school, I was yearning so bad for the mission field. Every time I came back, I sold all my stuff. And there was such a oil and water to me that I yearned for the mission field. And what it did for me is that I got rid of all my external stuff and I was able to be raw and receive, and God was speaking to me. He did a lot of physical miracles that really spoke to me. There's the generosity that I've seen in people that support the missions has broken my heart so many times in a good way that like it allowed me to really want to invest in humanity because of people that have said, God has put this on my heart to be able to give this. Give one person, one family gave a truck to one of the doctors that wasn't able to, that was walking to all the places. I mean, like stuff that, like for me, my heart was so moved by that I was like going, God, this is who you bring to fulfill your will in these certain situations. So I was convinced that I needed to quit school. So I was ready to quit school, went down there, had a piece of my heart to finish school. So that's why I finished nursing school. But I say, God, I need to be in a good place. Went to Franciscan University, finished nursing school, had a great experience there. Was involved in music ministry. So coming from that, I came back and I was like, who am I now if I'm not doing mission work every year? And that's when I started saying, well, maybe I should need to get married. So here I am dating, stuff like that. I couldn't really find anybody I connected with. So I said, everybody else goes to the bar. Why don't we go to the bar? And so mm-hmm. as I slowly opened myself up to a life that was different from what I known as a missionary that I was very comfortable with, I felt like I was blinded. As I sought, relationships and stuff like that, that became, my higher power, if you will. That became something that kind of ruled my thoughts. And so I started slowly, every single day, a little bit further away. So that actually lasted for about 25 years. So my solutions were worse than my problem. So here I am, my problem was basically that I just went out on the weekend and I did some things that I know I'm supposed to do. And so I can't lead the choir at church this, you know, this Sunday. So I back off from my commitments at the church. I back off from going to church. I'm like, how can I do this? I've already gone to confession, but here it is Sunday and I've already gone out again. So here I am with a struggle that I see is still, this is very easy to get into that cycle of going, I'm very repentant, but I'm not, able to receive the Eucharist and I'm not in the state of that I need to be in. So my solution was let me back off. And then, so that for me led me to a 25 year of almost kind of a desert time of seeking God and having these cycles of getting better, and going back out, and getting better until about 5 years ago where I was, at the point where I was broken. I was broken and, I lost my way. I was in a situation where, I felt like that I know that I'm a missionary. Like my, it was given when God's, I learned now that when God says something, it's true for always. And so for me, my heart was to be a missionary and I was still not, you know, I'm like going to church wasn't, it was different. It wasn't empty, but it was like I couldn't connect to it as much. So it got to the point, that I met a missionary and they ministered to me and I finally said, I said, God, this is you. I don't know. My life has to change dramatically for me to actually get back on track. So 5 years ago, I started in saying, God, I will change whatever you want me to do. I'm yours. And so I started the prayer every morning and every evening. I give you my heart, my mind, my body, my soul. I don't know what that looks like, but God, I'm willing to walk with it with you. So my life started changing. So I've been chased for the last 5 years. And for me, that was one of my struggles that's where my childhood came in, was basically to be alone was overwhelming. That became such a big fear for me that, one of the last days before this 5 years, like it started these 5 years, is that I was praying and I said, God, I'm used to, I feel like that I'm used to trying to get your attention. I'm trying to get, like even when I was younger, it was like, I'm trying to get the attention. I'm trying to get an answer. And I just need to know that you hear me. So this is the part that changed my life, where I went down from my prayer, balcony and, all of a sudden everything turned black and I saw these, three white, pillars almost, and they started falling down like dominoes. And God spoke to my heart again, like he did on the mission field. And he said, I hear you and you're not alone. And at the same time gave me the gift of faith. That whenever I pray, God hears me and I'm not alone. So he gave me, my mission now, which to me, I relate to, what Archangel Gabriel, gave to Our Lady, with the Annunciation was basically that God is here and he hears you and you're not alone. And so for me, my heart, that was the only time that I could ever relate to the being born again. And I live in my best days today because of that moment is that I became a new person with all the memory that I had in the past. I never would have said this before that time, but what I know for a fact now is that any kind of pain, sorrow, brokenheartedness that I had throughout the whole years I was away from God, away from my mission, from my childhood and all that stuff, I would go through it again. For that moment with God that puts it on my heart saying, I hear you and I'm not alone. So today when I pray, I get on my knees and I see God. I'm like going, God, I know without a fact because you gave me that gift of faith that you hear me and that I'm not alone. Do you know how many prayers in the past I didn't realize that my undercurrent commentary was, are you sure he really hears you? You know, and then I would leave that. But for me, if now today with the knowledge of that God hears me, is like every single prayer is like, God, let my prayer be according to your will. Let my prayer, I give you my heart, mind, body, and soul. So my life today is totally different. Because of that moment.
Yeah. Wow. That's awesome. Just down to a couple minutes here, man. Miguel Garcia from Holy Trinity Parish in Uptown Dallas is my guest. And he had the great blessing to meet Olivia Franklin. And I'm sure you shared part of this with her. And she thought, well, this is a story that ought to go on the radio. And I, you know, as we have to wind down here, it just sounds like the main crux of this is that never, never become convinced that God is not present. God is always there with us. The ups and downs, the, you know, it's been a roller coaster for you, but now, you know, you seem to be on the right track. You're working now in Family Missions Company. And what a story it is, and I appreciate you sharing it with us. We really only have about a minute remaining. Do you want to say anything about Family Missions Company in case people are interested in getting involved, or what should they do, or what will be?
Absolutely, sure. So it's going to be the best choice that you made in your life, other than following God, is to look into the missions. It has been for me. FamilyMissionsCompany.com is the website. You could also see my bio on there also. But for the most part, we do come and sees. We do week long mission trips. So there's a lot of opportunities to be involved, to check it out and
all right. FamilyMissionsCompany.com, FamilyMissionsCompany.com. Check out the bio of Miguel Garcia. He's been my guest. And again, thank you, Miguel, for coming in. God bless you. It's a fabulous story. I love to hear how God is working so concretely in people's lives. And even though we go in and out, you know, and we're there sometimes, and then we, like you say, get distracted and you pursue other things, but God is always there as if we'll just, you know, turn to Him. So thank you for your story. God bless you. And I appreciate you coming and sharing it with our listeners. And again, thanks to our dear friend Olivia Franklin. Without her, I probably wouldn't have, you know, dozens of interviews that I've done over the course of the years. And also Cecil Anderson, who's running the board for us. And if you have perhaps a testimony or a story that you think would be good for the interview of the week, please contact me directly, DavePalmer@grnonline.com, DavePalmer@grnonline.com. God bless you and have a wonderful rest of your weekend. Yes, thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Hello, I'm Teresa Strick, certified nurse midwife at BirthPoint. I want to invite you to an event at the Birth Center coming up on Saturday, October 11th. October is Pregnancy and Infant Loss Awareness Month, so we would like to welcome anyone from the community who is grieving the loss of a baby or just wants to support those that have. We will be assembling boxes to distribute to mothers that experience a loss. You can visit our website, birthpoint.com, to RSVP for the event or to find our Amazon wish list to donate.
Our Lady of Lebanon Catholic Church is excited to announce its 26th annual Lebanese Food Festival. The Lebanese Food Festival will take place from Friday, October 3rd through Sunday, October 5th at Our Lady of Lebanon Catholic Church in Louisville. Celebrate the vibrant Lebanese cultural heritage at this popular family-friendly festival. Enjoy authentic Lebanese cuisine, lively entertainment, and fun activities. For more information on the 26th annual Lebanese Food Festival, visit DFWLebaneseFoodFest.com.
Hi, everybody, and thank you for joining me for this edition of the North Texas Interview of the Week, broadcasting across all of our, well, three stations here in North Texas, Fort Worth, Dallas, and all around. And this is a program where we like to introduce you to local Catholic news, information, and personalities. And I must admit, I'm very excited about these next 25 minutes because I'm going to introduce you to a gentleman by the name of Rob Hayes. You may be familiar with him. And he's just one of those, at least in my estimation, kind of larger than life guys who just kind of seems to have done everything and is a busy guy and has his hand in a lot of different apostolates, and just a great guy. I don't know much about him, so I'm going to learn about Rob Hayes right along with you. And so I welcome him to the studio. Thanks for taking some time. Good to see you, Rob.
Thanks, Dave. Good to see you too.
And not too long ago, I interviewed his son, Josh, because he was the Hal Tehan Award winner for the Catholic Foundation event, which is basically the most exemplary, I believe, junior at a Catholic school in North Texas. And so it was kind of cool to kind of cut my teeth with your son in preparation for interviewing dad as well.
That was a very proud papa moment for me, to see him do that and give his speech in front of 1,500 people at the Catholic Foundation dinner. And he did great.
I really remember
hearing the joke where Bishop Burns was frustrated that he had to go up and talk after Josh Hayes.
Should be the other way around.
Exactly.
But well, a little bit of bio about you. I won't be able to mention everything because there is quite a bit, but Rob and his wife Alicia have 7 children, ranging from 20 on the upper end, a student at Notre Dame. They have Josh is over at Princeton now, where Rob is an alumni, all the way down to 1.5 years old. They've got an 18-month-old, so a busy household. They're parishioners at St. Anne Parish in Capel, and Rob is the founder of something called the Cottonwood Lectures, which we can mention. And also he is the head of a conference called the Successful Fathers Conference that he inherited from a gentleman by the name of Tom Spence. And runs. And there is the next Successful Fathers Conference is coming up in March, on March 28th of next year.
Next
so you
year.
Can circle your calendar and prepare for that one. And graduate of Princeton, you're on the golf team, you studied in Rome, Pontifical University. It's like, wow, but it all started, what, Tulsa, Oklahoma? Is that where you're from?
I was born here in Dallas, but mostly grew up in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Okay.
So I was a public school boy, very faithful Catholic parents. I have one younger sister, Rebecca, who's here in town as well. And I was a good student, but also a pretty good golfer. And so while nobody in my family had ever been to anything like an Ivy League school before, because of my golf, I had the chance to go be recruited at some of those Ivy League type schools and made the decision to go to Princeton. So little Oklahoma boy went over to
made it big
went to the Ivy League.
So you were there more on sports than academics?
Well, it was what's interesting about places like Princeton or in the Ivy League is there are no you're a recruited athlete, but there's no athletic scholarships. So okay. you have to be able to do both. So your academics and your athletics combined get you in. So I played all 4 years there, was captain of the team, and that sort of led into my journey into all these other things.
What did you study at Princeton?
I majored in politics with they called it a certificate, but it's the equivalent of a minor in economics.
Okay. Then what brought you over to Rome?
That was a good question. After I graduated college, I did investment banking at Merrill Lynch down in Dallas and Houston. I was in oil and gas. That's what my father had been in. And I spent time there and got a little burned out going through the process of the long hours. And so I went through a little bit of a vocational crisis, not knowing exactly what I wanted to do. And I had a friend of mine and I was thinking about maybe entering seminary. I wasn't really sure. I wanted to do something to keep moving the ball forward. And so I had a friend say, well, if you're thinking about entering seminary, why not just move to Rome? At least start the academic side.
They probably have a seminary there.
Yeah, they got a lot of things over there. So just start the academics. So start studying philosophy. And so I said, well, what the heck? So I moved to Rome, and that was in 2002, and studied at the Pontifical University of the Holy Cross. And I loved every minute of it. And after about a year there, I figured out that wasn't my vocation. So I came back to the States and ended up proposing to my now wife.
Yeah, that was the end of seminary, wasn't it?
That was the end of the idea of any seminary.
So who's your favorite philosopher besides Aquinas and Augustine?
Oh, that's a good question.
Got to eliminate those two.
Yeah, it does.
You know?
And I guess it would, it's really hard for me not to read and love John Paul II.
Yeah.
I mean, I read a lot of his works, and they just had a very personal impact on me, both, you know, the theology of the body, which is obviously more theology rather than just philosophy. But I do have a soft spot for medieval philosophy. That was my favorite class, was the medievals.
Yeah, that was an interesting time, that whole, like, high scholasticism time when the Franciscans and the Dominicans were buttonheads. And, yeah, that was a great time. Great time of synthesis. All right, so I could talk about philosophy the whole time.
Well, I would tell you, I have one of my child's middle names is Anselm, and another one is Augustine. So another one's name is John Paul, so we're going through all of these guys.
Oh, that's great. Have you always been a person of faith? Did you ever have any kind of time when you questioned your faith?
I never went too far off the reservation, but it definitely was in college where, at a place like Princeton, you get challenged. I mean, it's the most intelligent young people in the world and intelligent professors. And if you don't have grounding in what you believe and why, you will lose. You lose those battles. And so being in that environment forced me to read more, study more, do apologetics. And that all strengthened my commitment, I think, to the faith.
Yeah, so. Yeah. So no great departure, no huge crises of faith
No, I wish I had a more dramatic story, but I don't.
Yeah. When you met Alicia, did you all always want to have a big family? Was that always the dream?
I think so. I think that was one of the reasons why I was interested in her. But my mom came from a big family. I only have one sister. My parents were only able to have one kid, but I had always dreamed of that. I can remember my going to my grandparents' 50th wedding anniversary, and they were these German immigrant farmers from Bavaria that lived up in Minnesota. And I can remember we took this big picture of the two of them in the middle with their six kids around them and the six spouses and then the dozens and dozens of grandchildren. And I remember thinking, even as a teenager, what a remarkable legacy these two very humble, faithful, hardworking people left behind them, and that would be a really beautiful thing to do. And so my wife bought into that idea as well, and so we've been very, very blessed with our children.
I know you're friends with Jeff Scheffelbein, and I always think of him as well because he's got a big family.
He does.
I think he's got about the same number of kids as you do.
And lives on my street.
Lives in your street, and he's so busy, and he seems like he's everywhere. But then at the same time, he's a family man, and he's a husband and a father. Do you find that difficult to have kids ranging, 18-year range, and kids in college, kids, one and a half-year-old, and still be as active as you are? Is that and then running a thing like the Successful Fathers Conference? I mean, is that, and all the other things you're doing, is that difficult?
Well, what it always comes back to, for me, and what I tell people is that I read this one book, this wonderful book by a priest named Father Jacques Philippe. He has these little books, and one of them is called Time for God, and in there he talks about how the complaint that people have that I don't have time to pray, which is a common one and it's understandable, but it's never a question of time. It's only a question of priorities. And I always apply that to other things, whether it's to time with your family or your work or whatever it may be. It's never, ever, ever a question of time. God obviously provides you all the time that you need to do his will. The question is, what are the right priorities?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where the discernment and the prayer comes. And if I start sensing that things are disordered, maybe I just don't feel as close to my wife, I don't feel like I'm paying attention to my children or whatever it may be, well, that's why we have prayer. That's why hopefully people should be praying every day and spending some time asking God, what are my priorities? Well, how should I be allocating my time? How should I be changing what I'm doing? That's why we should be going on retreats every year. That's why we should be spending some time doing that. So that's what I tend to focus on.
Yeah. And while we're on the topic of fathers, I mentioned before the next Successful Fathers Conference. It's still many months away. It's in the spring of next year, March 28th. And you have Monsignor Roger Landry
as
a speaker. And tell us about him, why you chose him. I think some people may know about him. But
yeah, so you'll always see him if you're watching EWTN for the conclave. He's done a variety of things.
Bald guy,
north from New York, I think. Right now he's the head of the Pontifical Mission Society for the U.S., a recently pontifically appointed role. Previous to that, he had been at Columbia University as the chaplain, and he also had been the right-hand man of the nuncio to the United Nations. But he's done a variety of things, but he's a very gifted preacher. And particularly he strikes me as a guy's guy. He speaks to men. And that's the purpose of this conference every year, is to have a morning. It's only 3 hours on a Saturday morning in the spring, but it's a way to get a bunch of men together to just have an opportunity to think about their vocations, whether to their marriages, to their families, to their faith, and just get a little jump start at very low commitment, right? It's just a morning, but it's always a great group of guys, and we hold it at Dallas Country Club. So Father Roger will do a great job.
Yeah. And this is, tickets are not on sale yet for this. Is there a website or something that people can go to in a few months?
Yeah, there will be some emails and other things that'll be going out. Hopefully it'll be spread out here soon enough.
My guest is Rob Hayes. He is from St. Anne Parish in Capel. He and his wife Alicia, seven kids ranging from 1.5 to 20 years old. And we haven't even gotten to some of these things that I want to mention, but the Cottonwood Lectures, I know this is not like a public thing, and it's more, private invitation, your friends and all that, maybe at your house, but what was the inspiration for those?
Sure. The inspiration was twofold. One was I need more formation myself. I need encouragement to try to be a better husband and better father. And also as I came across a lot of my friends who are bright, intelligent people, but we all get swamped in the daily life. And we've got our jobs and our families and soccer practices and kid events. But the reality is that we all still have a vocation to study, to learn mm-hmm. more about our faith, about getting engaged in our culture. And so I wanted to create a place where, because of the different places that I've been at and studied, I do have access to interesting speakers and academics. And so I just decided to start bringing people in. And as you might know, Dave, I do collect a little bit of wine. And so I tend to pour some good wines. My wife is an amazing cook, so she always is she's a wonderful hostess. So we just bring out some good food and good wines and an interesting topic. And it's a way to help our friends and ourselves think about important things. Mm-hmm. And for those who have attended, they'll know that I always make a statement at the beginning of each of the lectures, and I'll say something to the extent of, there's no cost for attending. You know, I covered all the costs. There's no tickets, or I'm not selling anything. People are my friends. But there is a cost, which is a resolution. You've got to do something as a result of this talk. So whether mm-hmm. it's just buy the book and read the book, or the person who's speaking, or talk to your children about it, or start something. And it's been cool because there have been various initiatives, and even I think at least one marriage that have come from the lectures because people actually have taken that to heart. And so it's meant to be just a little bit of leaven. And what I've also found is that it's been, I think, successful because we're now going on over 10 years of it, in that people need an excuse to go out and just spend time mm-hmm. together. We're so busy yeah. that we're not good at building friendships or getting date nights with our spouses, and it gives a good excuse for people to get out and meet some people.
Is there anybody that you have not had as a speaker that would be on like your dream list of who would you like to book for either the Father's Conference or a Cottonwood lecture that you just haven't been able to book yet? Anybody come to mind?
I've had some pretty awesome people. I've been very fortunate. The person I think would be super interesting to get, I haven't had Bishop Barron yet.
Yeah.
I haven't had Father Mike Schmitz yet. I haven't had Jordan Peterson. That always would be an interesting one for me as well. But so there's a few on my list still.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny, interesting you mentioned about Bishop Barron. And, you know, there's a lot of. I'm interviewing a guy, a priest named Father Craig Bosick.
Okay.
And he's from Minnesota. And there's all these people from Minnesota. Minnesota, there's something going on in Minnesota. There's
Bishop Cousins is up there.
Yeah, yeah.
He's great.
Cousins, Jeff Cavins. And of course, there's just a whole lot going on there in Minnesota. All right. Well, board chair of Aquinas Institute for Catholic Life at Princeton University.
Yes.
What's that all about?
That is a passion of mine. So when I went to Princeton years ago, I didn't know if there were going to be any Catholics. I didn't know what spiritual life was like there. It obviously has a reputation as an elite university. And what I found there was that there was, at that time, a little bit smaller, but a very robust group of very faithful Catholics, including faculty and really important scholars. And that impacted my life and impacted my wife's life, who was also, she's an alumna of the university as well. And so it's something where as I moved later in my career, I was part of a group that helped build that up again. And so it is a very dynamic place. There are now hundreds and hundreds of students involved. We had just in last year, we had, I think, nearly 20 students enter the church at Easter. Mm. There's only less of 6,000 undergrads. When I was there, maybe we'd have one student, maybe two enter the church in the spring. And then this year it's 20. And so it's a really exciting, dynamic place. In some ways, what I've learned is a lot of people write off these elite schools thinking that they're woke, they're crazy, they're anti-Christian. And the reality is that now, as the world has gotten crazier, the Catholic Church and the chaplaincy here has become the bastion of, if you're interested in family, if you're interested in the truth of the human person, there's all of these opportunities to preach the gospel in many different ways. And students are incredibly receptive because they don't have the foundations of family and truth to stand on. And so it's a beautiful thing that we're seeing. And so that's something where I do try to spend some time focusing on that university. Because there, if the people that you're touching there, whether you like it or not, are the future government leaders, the future of business, the future of law. And so if we're touching these students, you're also potentially making significant impacts.
Very nice. What about Ethics and Public Policy Center? People have heard of that.
Yes.
You're the board chair of that.
I'm the board chair of the EPPC, which is run by a gentleman by the name of Ryan Anderson,
mm-hmm.
who I, again, knew back at Princeton. He was a good example of the type of students that we're trying to impact back at Aquinas. And he took over the organization a few years ago, and that's where some people may know of George Weigel. He's been a scholar there forever. He's the one who introduced me to EPPC years ago when I was working on my thesis in college. Ed Whalen, and there's a lot of different scholars that are members there. So what I love about EPPC is that they are the ones doing a lot of the intellectual and hard work. It's not a big grassroots organization. They're not very flashy, but they're the people doing the serious intellectual work in the background of thinking, how do we impact culture and public policy and the family, and how to influence leadership, whether in the church or in government, for the good.
And when you and I were exchanging emails back and forth, and I was thinking, I don't know, because you're doing so much, I don't know what to focus in on, and we're just kind of touching on a lot of things, but you wrote in an email, you said, how about we talk about the importance of Catholics starting things and be bold in their personal apostolates? Talk about that, because you've clearly done that. You're doing a lot of things, and you got your hand in a lot of things, but I think a lot of people, I don't know, for whatever reason, life gets busy and they may have this dream and they think of this or that, and they just, for whatever reason, they just never do it. So why is that important? Why what advice would you give to people?
Well, I'm always struck that I'll have conversations with people, say, well, you do this and you do this and you do this. How do you find the time? And the example that I give is like the Father's Conference. How much time do you think I spend a year on the Father's Conference? I call up Dallas Country Club to reserve the date, and that takes 10 minutes. I will write the emails that I'll send out, and that probably takes 30 minutes. I find the speaker. That's probably the hardest part, but I know people, so that usually takes a day or two. That's it. It's something that it doesn't actually take a lot of work, and yet people think it takes a lot of work. And I think a lot of people get overwhelmed with the idea of organizing things, of putting things on, when the reality is that if you just plan it out and do it, it actually doesn't take that much effort. And so I think some people are generally risk averse. Well, what if it fails? What if it doesn't work? And my experience through business has been, what's the worst thing that can happen? It fails. So what? Go do something else. Go try something different. And so I think we in the church and in our own apostolates think too much about downside, and we think too much about how much work it takes, and we overestimate those things.
Mm-hmm.
And rather than being willing to step out, try something. My experience has been that if it's something that you need, others need it too. So all the things that I've done that I've been a part of are things that I've thought that maybe I could use this or my friends could use this. So why not try it? And all of them start small.
Yeah.
And then they grow. I haven't started things with the idea that these are going to be big. And so I think I would just encourage people not to get overwhelmed by all of the what ifs, if that could go wrong. Just try it. And again, it fails. So what?
Yeah. When Josh was in here in the interview a few months, I don't know how long ago that was. Maybe it was longer than a few months ago. But when he was getting that award, I was very struck by him, a very, very impressive guy. And of course, when you see a young person, you think, well, they must have been raised well. So do you have any advice about parenthood, or maybe approaches that you and Alicia have done towards your kids? What has worked, or what would be your advice for parents out there?
I think this is the part where the formation it needs to be purposeful, and it's something that encapsulates the intellectual side as well as the moral side, and that it's a conversation. I think a lot of the things that my children have been successful in is because they understand the whys behind it. I mean, yes, there are times where as a parent you just say, I need you to do this because I'm the boss and you're not, mm-hmm. and that's just how it is.
Kids love when you say that.
They don't
by
like
the
that
way.
Very much. But as they get older, helping them understand the whys. And an example would be on social media, video games, technology, all these things that we're dealing with the parents. You know, we never, in our family, we've never had video games. at all. Mm-hmm. My kids have never played a second of Xbox or PlayStation. And not to say you can't, that can't be an okay thing to do, but I would have parents come to us and say, do you not fight with your boys about no video games? And I say, well, no. One, you're the parent. One, you're the parent, so you can lay down the rules. But two, it was never we forbidden fruit. It was, let me explain to you why we don't want you playing Fortnite for 10 hours a day. And it's not because we hate you. It's because we want you to spend your time well and actually would pull in, you know, medical evidence and distraction studies and talk about the struggles with ADHD and all of these things that to help them understand that the rules that we're laying out for you are not because we're just mean people, but it's because we want you to flourish. And so if you can come up with an argument and an explanation of why I will look back and say, thank God you played Xbox today, then I am happy to reconsider my position.
Yeah.
Until then, this is the state of play.
two last questions. We're down a little bit of time. The first one would have to be a quick answer. If you get a spare hour and you get to cozy up with a glass of wine and a book, what do you like to read?
I tend to read philosophy and theology.
I can't
help it.
You ever read the Nietzsche's and the Kant's and the Hegel's? Or do you just read the Catholic stuff?
I tend to read secondary sources on some of those guys because they're so esoteric. I don't always understand them. the modern guys. Nietzsche's maybe a little bit less so, but some of the more modern guys.
I've tried Phenomenology of Spirit a couple of times, Hegel, and I'm like, you know what? That's like reading James Joyce, you know, like Ulysses.
It is, yes.
It's like, okay, I don't get this. I'm not going
to. I have to listen to James Joyce on Audible because it's hard to read.
Okay, got 30 seconds. Anything that you got in the cooker? Any plans that you can tell us about, or anything in your mind that you like? I want to do this in the next 5 years.
I'm at an exciting stage of my life where I'd been running a hotel company for 20 years and decided to step away to help my father sell his company. And so I'm getting to dabble in lots of things. I'm investing in some things and trying to help some nonprofits and whatnot. And so to enter a phase of life where I get to figure out what I want to be when I grow up is an exciting time.
And take time to do radio interviews.
Radio interviews.
I'm very appreciative that you took time to come by here. Rob Hayes, thank you so much. Good to get to know you and get to know some of the ideas and inspirations behind the man. So I appreciate you coming. And thanks to Cecil Anderson for running the board. Thank you for listening. This has been the North Texas Interview of the Week here on the Guadalupe Radio Network. If you have ideas for future interviews, please email me, DavePalmer@grnonline.com. God bless you, and thank you for listening.
Thanks for joining us for this week's KATH 910 AM Interview of the Week. We hope you've enjoyed this presentation of Catholic news and information pertinent to North Texas Catholics. Please join us again next week at this same time for another KATH 910 AM Interview of the Week.
Hello, I'm Teresa Strick, certified nurse midwife at BirthPoint. I want to invite you to an event at the Birth Center coming up on Saturday, October 11th. October is Pregnancy and Infant Loss Awareness Month, so we would like to welcome anyone from the community who is grieving the loss of a baby or just wants to support those that have.
Thanks for listening to KATH 910 AM Frisco, Dallas, Fort Worth. Catholic radio for your soul on the Guadalupe Radio Network in North Texas. Heard also at grnonline.com and on your smartphone.